First U.S. presidents are judged partly on how they respond to crises during their terms. For some, that's included a pandemic or disease outbreak. Our next guest has dug into the history of how Presidents Wilson, Eisenhower, Ford, and others have handled the risk of pandemics. He says while some have fallen short, striking the right balance between politics and public health is important for getting things right. Max Skidmore is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He's the author of several books, including Presidents, Pandemics, and Politics. Max, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, I want to quote from your intro, quoting here, government, and that means presidential action, often provides the best and sometimes the only method of protecting the population. Can you talk about the importance of presidential action when it comes to a nationwide epidemic or pandemic?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. There are certain qualities that seem essential in a chief executive if that person is going to handle any serious threat, but let alone a pandemic. Well, and first of all, of course, is just basic competence. You need to expect that. Another is an understanding of government and how it works and the ability to make it work. And that presupposes that the chief executive have confidence in government. If he or she doesn't have a belief that government can be effective, it really isn't reasonable to expect him or her to make it that way. If you've spent your whole career slamming government, the least government is the best and so forth, which actually isn't true. The least government's pretty bad, generally speaking. But if that's your political ideology, and you aren't able to marshal government's resources, it's certainly understandable. But there's also another quality that Woodrow Wilson did not have. He had these qualities that I mentioned, certainly. But in dealing with the horrendous swine flu of 1918, he lacked one quality, and that was the ability to focus and the desire to focus. He certainly would have been capable, I think, but he was preoccupied with the war and insisted on continuing to pack troops onto ships and sending them abroad, which would mean that in many cases virus spread like wildfire through the troops, with large numbers being dead by the time they reach France.
Another example you look at in the book is the swine flu of 1976. President Ford then took a pretty aggressive approach. It got some criticism. I want to give a listen to him speaking here in spring of 1976.
No one knows exactly how serious this threat could be. Nevertheless, we cannot afford to take a chance with the health of our nation. First, I am asking the Congress to appropriate $135 million prior to their April recess for the production of sufficient vaccine to inoculate every man, woman, and child in the United States.
That was, you write, really an unprecedented effort. We're going to try to vaccinate everyone and do it quickly. Can you talk about how the Ford administration handled that and what we can learn from it?
It's instructive to us now in these days of gridlock and bitter politics and so forth. But Ford was a Republican president, a conservative Republican. But he also was an intelligent man, and he recognized what was needed, and that was strong and rapid government action. So he went to the Congress, as you heard in the clip there, and the democratically controlled Congress, the huge Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate, quickly supported his NIIP, the National Influenza and Immunization Program. And with some fits and starts, it got underway, and they were able to get a vaccine pretty quickly. And within a matter of a few weeks, they actually had succeeded in vaccinating nearly 50 million Americans. Then some troubles arose and so forth. And for a variety of reasons, the program was canceled. But I think Ford did the right thing. He's usually condemned as a result of that. But think of what would happen had he not done that and a pandemic did develop. Fortunately, it did not develop. And that enabled the Reagan forces, who had attempted to get the nomination for Reagan in 76 and oust Ford, they failed. So they were angry and they sniped at Ford from the right. And from the center, the incoming Carter forces sniped at Ford because they were incoming Democrats, so he poor Gerald Ford got it from both sides. But it would have been far better. It was far better, I think, to have no pandemic and yet to have a vaccine than it would have been to have a pandemic and no vaccine, as we're seeing currently.
And that's a quandary for any leader in the time of a potential pandemic. They're going to be condemned if they under-respond early on. But if they over-respond and it turns out the disease wasn't so bad, somebody's going to criticize them for that. You say you'd prefer that latter scenario. Go big, it sounds like.
No one, I'm going out on a limb here and say no one died as a result of Ford's activity. They might have died. They would have certainly have died if there had not been a vaccine program and a pandemic had developed. Now, there were a few people who died from Guillain-Barré syndrome, and sophisticated statistical studies indicated that their chance of developing that was considerably greater if they'd had the vaccine than if they didn't. But there's still no indication that the vaccine caused it or that it was anything wrong with the vaccine. These things do happen. And my understanding, and I'm not a physician or a scientist, but my understanding is that Guillain-Barré syndrome can develop after any major insult to the body, such as major surgery or that kind of thing. But it's very, very rare. And the number of people, I think there were 200 deaths out of about 50 million vaccinations. And some of those might have occurred anyway. So it was a gamble well worth taking, unless you were one of the 200, I suppose.
Now, here we are in 2020, and there's been an argument to let states and governors take the lead. Or now in states like Wisconsin, statewide orders have been overturned, an argument that hey, county leaders, local leaders should be taking the lead. Can we have an effective strategy if states and municipalities and counties are the leading force here?
Absolutely not. I, again, will go out on a limb and say that's insane. The president declares a national emergency, and that gives the president authority to take action. The president says, oh, he's not going to do it. Let's let the governors do it. That way, if the governors are successful, he can say, see, I was perfect in what I did. And if they are not successful, then he can say, well, it wasn't my fault. It was their fault. Similarly, with regard to state forces that want to delegate everything to the local jurisdictions, unless you have, it's like air pollution. You can't control air pollution if you have every state acting on its own. Air doesn't recognize state boundaries, and viruses don't either.
Looking at our current situation now, one thing that makes things difficult is that, you know, we're catching up. We're always playing catch up on science, trying to figure out how a virus or bacteria or whatever the disease cause right. spreads. Can you talk about the importance of communicating uncertainty and the fact that what we know is going to change from week to week, maybe even day to day?
Yes, well, we're faced with a special difficulty right now. And that is that the leaders of our government are rejecting the findings of science, and they tend to go with their gut instead of what scientists say. And the president can say, Dr. Fauci says something, and I don't agree with that. Well, one would think as a non-scientist, it wouldn't matter whether he agreed with it or not. Unfortunately, he's a non-scientist with a huge amount of power and authority to overrule the scientific decisions. And we are paying the price as a result of that. We have to recognize that at the beginning of the Trump administration, there was no coronavirus in America. He says he's handled it perfectly, and the situation would be far worse if he hadn't been so skillful. But we now have had more than 85,000 deaths from coronavirus. We're heading toward 100,000 or more. We're heading toward a million of cases of infection of coronavirus. Every one of those infections and every one of those deaths have occurred on Donald Trump's watch. And for him to say that he's handled it perfectly when our record is worse than that of the record of any other country in the world should cause even the most hardcore supporter to stop and examine the situation.
We'll leave it there for now. Max, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I've been talking to Max Skidmore, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and author of the book presidents, pandemics, and politics. He talked with us about how presidents in the past have handled disease outbreaks and lessons we can learn from them in the current pandemic.